ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Salier Report. I'm in Stavoren in Friesland, and I'm joined by my good friend Thomas Meyer. So usually I drive south to Switzerland, but this time you came north to Friesland. And
right.
So we welcome you.
Thank you so much for being here. And it's a wonderful place. I just wanted to check whether Friesland really exists or whether this is the reality or the official reality.
No, this is reality.
It's reality. I'm convinced.
Yeah.
It's wonderful here. Thank you to be here.
So we're here on the anniversary of 9/11.
Yes.
And we started recording at 11/11/11. And we are here to talk about spiritual warfare. And our subtitle is Light in the Age of Darkness, which was the title of a wonderful symposium that
yes.
you gave in Basel several years ago.
I think 3 years. I was wrong. I thought it was 6 years, but this gentleman told me it is only in 3 years.
3 years.
And we just went through the material. There is great material. And
yeah,
I think
so there's two lectures on the law that I'm very interested in publishing.
I know.
Yeah.
That's threefold. That's very good. I also told him. And on the other hand, we have something which is really new, I think, for all the viewers also. This is a scene out of the mystery drama 4 by Steiner, which shows the relation of the Ahriman being, who is all around active, and the human being, and the inspiration that Ahriman performs with most human beings who are able to be inspired by him.
So we just were at a conference this weekend on the lies and deception, including about 9/11, and you gave a presentation about 9/11, and you connected the operations around Pearl Harbor with the operations around 9/11, with the operations around COVID, and then included operations around Ukraine. There are many different similarities. And
yes.
so part of spiritual warfare in the modern age is dealing with these false flags and operations. So tell us a little bit about what you said.
Well, it was actually not original by me. It was by this American health official under Trump, Jerome Adams, who used that phrase that we have now our moment of pandemic, which is like the moment after Pearl Harbor, which is like our moment after 9/11. He linked it. And I started thinking about that. And that's what I tried to talk about a little bit. But if we are going into spiritual warfare, I think it would be also good to include the spiritual entity of not only Michael in the light sense, but Ahriman.
Mm-hmm.
Ahriman is the unknown factor of today's official or even private world. And I think it's...
So how does Ahriman relate to Satan? Because for many of the Christians, they see this as demonic and satanic.
Well, in the Bible, you have two concepts. You have the Satan and you have... the devil. They are differentiated. Satan is more or less what in spiritual science is called Ahriman.
Okay.
Yes. And
so Lucifer is which?
Devil.
Okay.
In the Bible, the devil not always, is used for Lucifer. Of course, Lucifer is important, and we have talked about that a little bit. But today, we are in the age of the Ahrimanic deception. He is the master of deception. He is the master of deceiving by thinking. And that's why I think what we will show on the web is a scene where you can see how Ahriman works so that he suppresses the human intellect. In this conference, if I may refer to it again, there was a very good feeling for the necessity of common sense. Many, many speakers mentioned that, actually. We have to keep common sense, which is next to time, the most precious gift we have, common sense. And it's threatened. And the Alemannic forces want to inspire people, but they don't want to be understood. They don't want to be understood.
Well, it was very interesting. You pointed out that Helen Knowlton was the PR firm on 9/11 for the establishment, it appears. And then they were the PR firm for COVID, and now they're the PR firm in Kiev.
Yes.
And but you know, if you're going to package an official reality and you're going to deceive with an official narrative, you it's a huge business.
I agree.
And it takes a lot of time and money and effort to package and promote and sell the lies. And it's big business.
It's big business. And I was surprised to find out Helen Knowlton was founded in 1925 or 4 even. So it has a long history. And the man who was behind the deception for the Iraq war with this girl who was the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador, he was very proud afterwards to have performed this action. And then the incredible thing is that this is all known. It's in Wikipedia, but the WHO, which I dubbed the World Health Organization, and who is sitting in Switzerland, were not ashamed to use a firm with that of open crime they did already.
Well, if you listen to descriptions of how the official narrative is created and built, the people doing it feel, okay, you know, they talk about the general population as if they're cows or sheep or whatever, and they believe they needed to be herded with simple stories.
Yeah.
And then they need to be incentivized financially to follow the, so, you know, so if you pretend and go along with the official narrative, then you'll get your check and you'll be treated okay. So it's a herding technique.
Yeah.
And they truly, sincerely believe that the livestock need simple stories and can't cope with reality.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. That's how far we have come in discarding the integrity of the individual and its common sense function.
Well, it's interesting. If you go back and you listen to the history of the people who engineered the assassination of Kennedy or the people who engineered the financial fraud in the 80s and 90s, they kept being astonished that they would get away with it. And then they would double down and get away with it, double down and get away with it. And what they discovered was, as long as people could, I call it the story of I am good. You know, so you give people, as long as you give them a check and the story of I am good, they'll go along with you.
Yeah.
Because then they can believe they're good, they're not doing anything evil. You know, we're in Iraq because we're helping women, we're saving women and making women free. You know, so they get these various stories of I am good. And as long as they get those stories, they'll go along.
Absolutely. Well, and we have, you mentioned the assassination of Kennedy. I was always surprised that the title of the book about the unspeakable is very interesting. And I think he is practically an inch away from what we term in spiritual science. We have talked about that, the Soratic and the Ahrimanic, both. He has a feeling for that dark reality of spiritual beings. Unspeakable is just a good notion for making clear there are things involved that go beyond the normal understanding.
So you and I did an interview many, many years ago in your office in Basel, and we talked about how lies create these elemental beings.
Yes.
Which are like a constituency for the lie.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at the history of the last, well, our entire history, you know, you just create, you're creating more and more of these constituency for the lies.
Yeah, elementals in spiritual science, they're even called elementals produced by the human beings. There are nature elementals, they are produced by higher beings without us having any doing in it. But these elementals of lies are created by humans, and that's why human beings are responsible for their dissolution sometime. And the only means to dissolve them is to see the truth of a lie, to see that a lie is a true fact somewhere.
We once had a workshop where we asked people to map out the 2,000 years before they were born and the next 2,000 years. Mm-hmm. And what we discovered was it was very difficult for them to do that because they were stuck on certain events where they couldn't get a clearing of the truth.
Yeah.
9/11, the Kennedy assassination, the inability to clear it with the truth got them stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And created a, it's like a fur ball, and they mm-hmm. couldn't think in 1,000-year increments and sort of envision 1,000 mm-hmm. years. They got stuck in mm-hmm. the fur ball.
Mm-hmm.
And part of, I think part of having a free and inspired life is finding a way to clear those events and get free of the fur ball.
Yes. But that means work. That means going through all this thicket wall of flies. You have to have the courage to penetrate that. And this is not everyone's natural gift, so to speak. It needs courage, like you have it, like all the truthers, if you can say, have it. Because you make an important, I would even call it a spiritual experience, which is you experience the resistance of those powers who were used as glue for making the lies glue to the facts. Anyone who penetrates this layer to remove the lie layer will make an experience of resistance that might reflect in the feeling, oh, should I do that? Is it necessary? Is it possible? Is it not better to leave it?
I struggle with this because I grew up in a world where everything, you know, everything was a transaction or an operation. And these kinds of false flags were just operating. 9/11 is just a bigger false flag than, mm-hmm. you know, what I grew up with. And so if you look at how the economy worked, you had reality. And then if you looked at the official narrative, you had the official reality. It's like growing up in Disney World where there's Minnie and Mickey upstairs and then there's a reality below the street. And so I grew up with this reality and official reality. And, you know, and it was very sort of fractured because different groups, you know, the wealthy had a different sort of official reality than the poor. But essentially it was the same bifurcation. But everything was sort of a transaction or operation, and you saw it as such. And so when you see a 9/11, okay, well, it's just a bigger operation. And I don't get frustrated by the manufacturing of the official reality mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. it's always been that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's what it does. And so I remember when I had my last experience with, you know, I had a terrible experience with the New York Times and the Bush administration. Then I had a terrible experience with Washington Post. And I said, okay, they're criminal enterprises, no point talking to them. And I left. I never tried to get their attention. I never tried to get the paper. I never tried to, you know, I expended not a dime even thinking about them. And yet I continue to watch so many people hungering to get the truth in them mm-hmm. when, in fact, of course they're never going to publish the truth. That's not what they do. That's not their business. It's like I would never ask an orange juice company to make croissants.
No.
Because that's not their business, okay? I still struggle with why anybody has any frustration with it. In other words, if you can't let go of the official narrative, you know, to engage in spiritual warfare, you have to let go of the official narrative and stop struggling against trying to fit reality in the official narrative. It's never, those are two entirely separate things. They're not designed to...
Yes, I agree. But don't you think it is also, it needs some effort, not only to know, oh, this is the official narrative, it is certainly a lie and this and that, but to go to very details, to know exactly what happened.
It's great to know exactly what happened. It's not great to hunger for the affirmation of the person trying to kill you.
No.
Okay. So we're in a war, and it's a spiritual war, but it's also a material war. Someone's trying to kill you. if you want the person who's trying to kill you to affirm you, to hire you, to give you money, to pay attention to you, to love you, you're going to die. You have to let go. And that's what I see as being the struggle here, first and foremost. You can't get clear about this operation or that operation if you, unless you let go of trying to count on, need, want your enemy.
I do agree. But it helps if people, and this was a very good thing at the conference for me. My Dutch is very poor, but I understood the first lecture to a certain degree because he wanted to help the people to understand the difference between what they think they see and what they actually see. You remember the example he made in the Anne Frank House? He showed a picture and said, "What do you see?" And of course, many people immediately they recognize and say, "That's the Anne Frank House." And he said, "No, you don't see any house, not even a house. You see colors, you see a wall, and you see people standing there." I think that's very helpful for many of us, not to believe that you see all sorts of things, whereas you see simple phenomena. This is a good, I find it a very good thing for the introduction of this conference.
So, yeah, but it comes down to who. Who do you trust? Who is a reliable source of information? And who's trying to kill you and who's trying to help you?
Well, I think people should only trust their own eyes and their own thought, nothing else. Whom should I trust?
Well, they need to trust the person they buy food from. So I need to trust my farmer.
Okay.
I need to trust my sheriff. I need to trust the person who made the car. I mean, I navigate around in a material world, and I'm deeply dependent on people for food, for energy, for shelter, and I need to trust them.
I agree in that sense, of course.
Right.
But you must be open that even the people you trust is deceiving you. So you must be open for correction if necessary.
Right.
Trust is, of course, necessary in life. Otherwise, we can't go to the grocer and I don't know what. But you have to be agile. If necessary, you have to correct your view. And say about the person who you trusted for 5 years, now the person did something which is not trustworthy. Who tells you that? I think we have to trust our own mind in the last resource. Even if we have a great spiritual figure and people are greedy for great spiritual figures today, they have authorities. I tell you a wonderful thing. I think I never told you that. You know the figure of Krishnamurti. He made a wonderful process. This process was connected to Holland because it was here in Ommen, I don't know where it is, where one morning he says, "The organization that has been built around me is worthless." He dissolved the organization that was built around himself. An incredible deed of courage, because people were at his feet. He had money, he had resources, and one morning he says, "Truth is a pathless land. There is no organization possible in Truth Matters." And then he was getting a free mind, as there are few in this century. And one day someone came to him and said, Mr. Krishnamurti, I need a guru. I need you as my guru. I need a guru." He listened and said, "No." But the poor fellow insisted so much and said, "But I need you as a guru." 3 times. And at the end, Krishnamurti turned to him very kindly, lovingly, and said, "All right, I'm going to be your guru, but you have to obey your guru." And the man said, yes, "I'm going to obey you." And he said, "First thing I have to tell you, and I'm your guru now, is You don't need any guru. You just need your own mind. And the man was shocked, of course, was disappointed. But this shows something which we all need, I think.
Well, we need to take responsibility.
And don't take any authority as, you know.
Right.
Are we free of authorities? That we are in the age of specialists and professors. And if somebody is a professor, some people already go by their need.
So let me say it this way. There's an official reality, there's reality. Then also there's material reality and there's spiritual reality. So imagine sort of a quadrant, you know, and some, you know, some is visible and some is invisible. So it gets complicated. But if you look at all the people who can teach and inform us of those different things, ultimately I'm the only person who can figure out how to build a navigation map and how to manage for me.
Exactly.
And part of it is I have to live my free and inspired life, and that has to be my decision, and I have to take responsibility to live it.
Yeah.
So only I can do it.
Yeah.
I mean, no one else can do it for me.
That's why the integrity of your own mind. Emerson, you know, I love Emerson, once said, in the last resort, there is nothing sacred but the integrity of your own mind.
Right.
100% true.
Right.
And maybe to link it with, for another occasion, with Threefold, that we have both talked about many times. There was a man who was actually the origin of Threefold movement in Europe in the 17th century. He said, and he wrote a treatise, has never been translated in Latin. And he opened it by saying, there is nothing more detrimental for a human being than being a human being without knowing what that means to be human. That's the beginning. And then he comes and says, well, some people think the human being is a thinking animal. Then he discusses that, dismisses it, and etc. And then he ends up with saying, the human being is an image of the gods. And that means, if you can accept that, not only as a religious belief, but as something that makes sense, then you have the basis for what can lead to the free spiritual life in Threefold. Without a human being a spiritual entity that understands itself as such, image of the Godhead, then you have no spiritual life, because the basis is not there. That's why I would always begin with this. The Threefold has, of course, the economy, the politics, but the spiritual life is the basis. And if people identify with their, you know, body, nothing against the body, who will die, it's not enough. We have to understand that we are spirits. Then we can have the spiritual warfare. Then we are there also. Maybe it's not clear enough, but I hope.
So what I keep thinking about is spiritual warfare in our age is very much has to occur in both the spiritual and the material.
Mm-hmm.
Because we live in the material and mm-hmm. the spiritual. We live
mm-hmm.
in both.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to get help and guidance from the spiritual world, but we have to apply it in both the spiritual and the material world.
I agree.
So it's both.
I agree. Yeah. So what do you summon as forces in what you call the spiritual warfare? And you were using it, the term, at the conference yesterday.
Right.
So what would you say to people? What do you have to summon in yourself?
So I believe that everything that that evil moves both spiritually and materially. It moves through material. And it's a spirit. It's not, many times people think they're fighting another person, but they're not. They're fighting the evil that's working through that person.
Exactly.
And to me, spiritual warfare is one, preventing the evil from harming you or those you're responsible for, but then helping to save that person who's coming at you from the spirit of evil moving through them. So you're trying to separate them from the spirit of evil.
Yeah, very important.
So one of the books I love is The Screwtape Letters.
Yes.
By C.S. Lewis.
I love them also, of course.
Yeah.
You remember the scene where he sits, his hero sits in the British Museum, is studying very high spiritual matters, religious, and then the devil comes and says, don't you think it is a much better idea to go out and have a steak now?
So, but you know, it's all about how humans are tricked and turned against each other.
Yes.
And so when you have somebody coming at you in a way where you're being turned against each other, your job is to separate them from a spirit of evil and save them too.
Yes.
Right. So.
But doesn't that imply that people get an objective understanding that the evil that works through people is, of course, also an entity in itself? It's not just a projection.
Right.
Yes, but that is not
evil's
so.
Evil's real, and it's a spiritual
real.
Force, right.
It's real, but there are even theologians who don't believe that. There are philosophers. I don't know whether in America you know the name of Hannah Arendt.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, Hannah Arendt was going to Jerusalem to witness as a reporter the Eichmann process. And in the course of that process, she had the feeling, well, if I look at this poor human being, I can only see a banal figure. And then she coined the, for me, terrible phrase of the banality of the evil. Well, she couldn't discriminate.
But she wasn't dealing with the force then.
No, right. She was just looking at the exterior. And that might have been quite banal.
Yeah, but the force was gone.
Yes.
Yeah, the force was too.
Yes,
busy
but then she thought evil,
to
evil. That's evil. That's evil. That's one of the mass murderers.
Well, because she's looking at it through the material world.
Yes.
Right.
And then she said, "That's even worse for me."
So one of the things I discovered, sort of in the process of dealing with evil, is the most important thing for me in coming to grips or having to deal with evil, is not to worry about evil or focus on how to protect yourself from evil. It's to embrace the light.
Yes.
Because, so our subtitle is Light in the Age of Darkness.
Yes.
You know, part of navigating in this complex phenomena is having the maps that you get by being connected to the light. I mean, that's where your navigation,
yes,
best navigation tools come from.
And
but the other thing is,
then you can shed light on evil, and that's what we need.
But the other thing is, the light protects you from evil.
Yes.
The evil is afraid of the light.
Yes. But
and the power of the, you taught me this, of cosmic intelligence, it's much more powerful.
Yes.
So part of this is you've got to stay, I call it, my nickname for it is, you got to stay in good with the guys with the blue light.
In good?
The guys with the blue light. Have you ever heard my blue light story?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So you got to stay in good with guys with the blue light because they will, you know, they will tell you to move to the side of the road just as the truck comes down, you know?
Yes, but my subject is also, you have to understand everything, evil also. And for that, you need a higher light to understand. And Arendt, if I may finish that, she even says, with these phenomena of evil, which she calls banal in a way, even thinking of the human beings is at its end. Thinking comes at its end vis-a-vis evil. That's a capitulation of the force of common sense.
I just think she's wrong.
Of course she's wrong.
I mean, there's lots of...
But she's a philosopher, and she's a friend of Heidegger, you know, and highly praised.
Well, yeah, but of course, the people pushing the official narrative find her very useful.
Okay, okay. Right? Yeah, yeah, I totally agree.
Right.
Absolutely. But it has to be exposed without hate, without being antipathetic. But I think it's... When I read that, I couldn't believe my eyes.
Well, to anyway. Me, part of... engaging in spiritual warfare is investing your time well to learn how to do it. So, you know, there are trillions of pages of books and documents all leading you down, you know, a time waste path.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's part of the challenge of the deceptions. There's many roads that lead you to no place.
And sure, and the deception lives from the fact that we usually don't distinguish between what is essential and what is peripheral. We make not this distinction. So if we are overflooded, for example, with information, I said before, and I can only repeat it because I don't think anything has changed. There was never an age with so many people, with so many informations about so many different things, at the same time with so little thinking and thought. Information is not thought. Any information I get through the web is object of penetration by thought. Information and thought are totally washed together today.
So one of the challenges that I've had since the pandemic started is I feel the general field deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at how much time it takes me to kind of, in prayer or, you know, I do breathing exercises to reach the higher mind and stay in a higher mind, it takes much more time and work to stay in that higher mind, to get to the higher mind. It's as though there is an effort, and I associate with the injections, to lower the human mind.
I totally agree. There is an objective aggravation of the gravity, of the mental gravity, so to speak, around the planet. You're drawn down wherever you go and look. And that's new.
So I get a lot of reports that the IQ is falling. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah,
but that's...
yeah. You know, may I introduce Steiner just very shortly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He once said the electrification, also in communication, will have the effect that people don't, in German, kapieren.
Comprehend.
That's why all these subjects like 5G, etc., is extremely important, because I can see it with young people. They hang on to things, but they don't understand anymore. They have a lot of information, a lot of intellect, but the understanding power is weakened.
Right.
I can tell you how I felt when I was in Amsterdam a couple of days ago, because I had an early flight. I went to the Rembrandt House, which is wonderful, I think, a great exhibition. Then I went to the station. Took me a long time, a lot of people. But the atmosphere in Amsterdam between the Rembrandt House and the Central Station, I couldn't believe it. And when you approach the station, you have all this...
Amsterdam after the pandemic was a completely different place than
I
before.
I can't believe so.
Right, it's frightening.
I can't believe so. I had a similar feeling in Paris a couple of years ago. I loved going to Paris. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's horrible.
Yes. So that's, but if that is true, what we are saying now, that means how can we raise in ourselves and in our friends and colleagues the will to always come to the higher level, even if it is harder than before?
So how do we do it?
That's my question to you.
So I can tell you how I try and do it, mm-hmm. but I think, you know, every person is different. So the question is, how do you do it?
Yeah. Okay, it's an individual question, I agree.
Yeah.
But there is a common factor. If the people believe they have an inner center, a mental center, an ego, a spiritual entity, and a thinking faculty, then they have the tool to start, even if they do it differently.
Right.
If they don't believe in thinking, and this is now already philosophical doctrine, oh no, thinking, no, no. It's all words. It's all words. The words are so important today. That's, by the way, already a great subject in Goethe's Faust.
Right.
Mephisto gives a brilliant appraisal of the word instead of the concept and the idea. That's an Mephistophelic Ahrimanic tendency, which is all over. How many times, I don't know how you had this experience, I was in the case of having to explain something which was only a word problem. Take the word race. If I would have used the word race yesterday, maybe in this audience it wouldn't have produced a shock. But in a normal audience, you already have a problem. If you use a word, that's meaningless. It depends what you think when you use a word. But today.
So who do you think does a good job of accessing and staying in a higher mind who can inspire us to do the same?
Well, 100 years ago, people were still speaking of higher beings and called them masters. And I believe they are still existing today.
Right.
But probably they are all a bit in the destiny of, you know, Lohengrin by Wagner?
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Yeah.
And he has the destiny. He cannot, after a certain point, he has to become invisibly working. And I think there are many higher intelligence. That would be a very interesting subject for some time.
So we just went to the Wagner House in Luzern.
Uh-huh.
It was so interesting. Yeah, because we saw the story of, you know, he prepared a special composition for his wife's birthday right on Christmas.
I know it.
He had the musicians lined up on the stairs. The conductor had been sneaking off to prepare the musicians to prepare it for her birthday. And Cosima, his wife, had gotten angry because she thought the conductor was slacking off and was complaining about the poor conductor.
Yes.
Anyway, but, you know, it was apparently the birthday present of all time.
It was about Christmas.
Yeah,
it's your new birthday.
Christmas. Well, you know, it's funny because my birthday in the United States is the day before Christmas, but here it's Christmas.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. And it's the Siegfried idyll. And they played it in the background, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful.
I just thought that was beautiful.
Yes, it is. Great.
Because great music, I think, one thing that helps me, because I always have, you know, so my two favorite composers are Bach and Vivaldi. And so I always have Bach, Vivaldi, or, you know, so on the weekends I do Gregorian chants. But I find music helps me tremendously to stay in a higher mind.
Absolutely. And I think that it's wonderful that you have the freedom to introduce music in your talks in Solari. Mm-hmm. That's just without any much explanation. That's therapeutic. We need that. As long as we have good music that has not been changed by the directors, you know. Yes, that's one of the means for higher development. And trust, we need trust. We need trust in the invisible. Not deny the visible, but behind the visible we have the invisible. And what you would term, Goethe speaks about in one of the wonderful poems, The Secrets. He speaks about a secret brotherhood who is composed of people who have done their job in life. Their mature age. No one is admitted who has not really gone through life. And they are invisible and they work from higher planes, which is maybe more effective sometimes than working externally.
Nothing is that you're calling the masters?
Yes, the masters are in these.
You know, sometimes they won't assassinate a person because they don't want them to go to that level.
Oh. Well,
they're more dangerous if they rise to that level.
Well, yes. You think so?
Yeah, I know so.
That's why we are still alive?
There are other reasons. There are other reasons. That's conjecture.
Yes.
So who are the people who have most helped you, who's most inspired you and helped you stay? Steiner clearly is one of them.
Steiner, but some of the people I wrote biographies, this is an example,
Dunlop.
There is no one I admire so much. I mean, look what he did. The World Power Conference, which is still existing.
And you published a biography of Dunlop.
So I published a biography, and he's still in the world. People speak positively on him in his own foundation.
Okay, so Steiner, Dunlop, number three.
That's enough.
No.
Well,
You have Goethe right there, the painting.
Who?
What's the painting in your living room?
The painting. A real painting, you mean? Yeah, the new one I got, the Parsifal painting.
No, you have a if you walk into your living room and you have books on both sides, and there's a picture, a portrait of Goethe.
Of Goethe?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, Goethe.
Yeah.
Goethe is so huge. It's so huge, of course.
Yeah.
Goethe is so huge, and you find in my talk about reincarnation.
And then when you walk in your office, there's a statue of Christ.
Yes.
So Christ.
Of course. But you know, the most sacred things are those I personally don't like to talk too often.
Well, but if people need to know how to be successful in spiritual warfare, they need to know who most inspires.
And Michael.
Yes. Yeah.
Because you cannot easily go directly to the Christ. You can, maybe sometimes, but Michael is the helper for fight, for spiritual fight,
so
warfare.
Are we not also in the age of Michael?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that.
I think the Michael age is a reality. But whenever you have a positive age, you have a counter age.
Right.
And that's the Ahrimanic. And so the Ahrimanic people or beings, they hate everyone who is waking up. And so we need some force to stay in tune with Michael.
So if I'm listening to this and I want to stay in right relationship with Michael and access him, connect with him, what do I do?
You try to have a real understanding of the real reality, of all the facts around us, positive, negative, be beyond. Be not a partisan, take things as they are. That I have learned from Steiner, maybe from Dunlop, to have an open eye on everything that is around us. And
but how can I learn about Michael?
There are different accesses. You can learn about him in his history of being archangel. Archangel already in the antiquity of the Greek people. If you go further back, you come to his time in the Jewish people. We talked about, I think, the Gideon story is in a Michael time.
Right.
So you have him active and he comes again and again. But his difference to the other archangel is he has a waiting attitude. He doesn't automatically give you an impulse. The others don't behave like that.
He doesn't intercede without
without
a request.
Yes. And we have to make the first step in his direction to make clear I'm ready to work in your sense, and this means have cosmopolitan interests, have the humanity in your view, not personal interests only.
Right.
The whole spiritual development should be free from our natural.
Right, so you have to act in the best and highest concern of all concerns.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Or the best and highest interests of all concerns.
That's Michaelic.
So I'm very proud because we're about to publish the last lecture.
Oh, yes.
In Spiritual Science Academy.
Yes.
It was created to do a series of lectures that would give an overview of the different material of Steiner. And we've been working on it for 2 to 3 years, and we're just about to put up the last one, and then we'll make a big announcement of, da-da, it's done.
Good.
It's all available.
So, well, at this point, I have to thank you tremendously, Katrin, that you had this initiative and that you wanted me to do this with you.
I'm only publisher. You did it.
No.
Because it's a lifetime of work.
Yes,
it's
but you
distilled.
You had no resistance. You had no... I think in one case, maybe you have had some reservations, but you didn't make them authority for what I'm doing. So I had total freedom, and it is a good example of free spiritual life. That no control, no censorship, and I tell you more, no anthroposophical group that I have ever known had a similar intention to do something like that.
I'm not an anthroposophist, no. So I'm free to...
No. Yes. But you have an unbiased interest in anthroposophy. That's what counts. You remember in the lecture...
Well, I have an unbiased interest in what you have to say about anthroposophy.
No. You remember yesterday, I had a reason to say, as the man said, Thomas Meyer seems to be a fan of Rudolf Steiner or something like that. Quite benevolent, I made it clear. Yes, I have an interest. I'm gratefully indebted, but I'm not a member of any society.
Right.
That was important.
Right.
People have to have the courage to see, oh, society is not everything. And the society today is rotten. It's a society of people who are benevolent with the WHO and et cetera, et cetera. So I don't rather go into that. But you had an initiative here, which I really am greatly, deeply grateful.
Well, after we have the last one published, I want to do an announcement that it's all there and it's all complete. And I think for anybody who doesn't understand Steiner's work, it's a wonderful introduction.
I hope so. I mean, the reactions you sent me, some of them are quite thoughtful and interesting.
Yeah, people are very, very grateful.
I'm very happy about that.
Yeah.
And I hope we will have in the future, maybe here, I would love to come here again. It's a wonderful place. Next time I take my bathing suit. Faust. And the great figures of European culture.
Yeah. Wow. So I want to do all the great...
Later. Next
I want
step.
To do Goethe, Schiller.
Yes.
Many.
Good.
So Spiritual Science Academy is finished and published. And we now have, for people who want to access an introduction to Steiner or explore it, they have your complete overview.
Comments. Well, complete. But... may I add, the last one was about the core mission, we called it, of Steiner's. Uh-huh. Reincarnation of karma in a scientific way. Because today you find reincarnation and karma in the marketplace, but not in a scientific way. And one of the most things, I think I mentioned it, I hope, is the relation of Goethe to the leader of the Jewish people, Moses. Mm-hmm. It's there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a key for understanding. So I hope people turn a little bit about on these things when listening to the last thing. And, you know, also the second thing, the first systematic research into a karma individual background was about Rudolf von Habsburg, Erzherzog Rudolf, who committed suicide in 1889, I think. And Steiner started with that, and it was most difficult. It was not just, he finds these ideas. No, it was difficult. Why? Because there was a number of people in Vienna of that time who imagined they had been the former incarnation of Rudolf von Habsburg, Nero. And that was so difficult because he had to tackle It was not easy to say, it's all nonsense. No, he had to go through that, and it took him a long time. But his beloved teacher, who was related in history to none other than Plato, he was his teacher, Schröer. After the self-assassination of Rudolf, Steiner came to Schröer, and Schröer, out of the belly, if you like, immediately said, Nero. And Steiner pondered, why does he say Nero? But for him, it was not just taking that over as a truth. And he researched that individual which has a relationship to the basic subject of our time, evil. Nero did evil out of freedom, so to speak, and he loved it, a very strange taste.
Well, I will say this. Some people come into the world and they are just from the beginning dedicated to evil.
Yes.
Yeah. They come into the world
so that way. Was Nero. But what was his next incarnation? He had to do evil on command of others. That's a new step. And what's the next step in his incarnation? He killed himself.
So I think the hardest thing for most people is if you are a human being who has empathy and you have never channeled evil or dealt directly with evil, it's very hard to imagine that some people, as you say, have no soul or they have no empathy and they channel evil and they enjoy it.
Yeah.
So part of being effective at spiritual war is fathoming that some people are like that, and their behaving that way is for them very successful and brings them great success in this world. And, you know, part of it is seeing that clearly and not getting tricked by it.
Yeah.
I mean, what I find the greatest trap that most people fall into is they crave the attention, the treats, the affirmation of the people who are killing them. And of course, you know, then they've got you by the short hairs.
Yeah. So, spiritual warfare linked to Michael, if I may come to a very important thing we have to.
Right.
So people have to understand Michael, and also
he's the guy with the blue light.
Yes. Okay. Good. Wonderful. So thank you again, Katrin, and I hope our spectators and hearers have fun and interest also in this.
Okay, well, congratulations on the publication of Spiritual Science Academy. And thank you again for doing it. I know it was a tremendous effort.
No. I do what I can, but as is said in a novel by Samuel Beckett, I do what I can, but there is nothing I can. Self-irony. To be not...
There's nothing I can do?
I'm sorry for this. for this. A choke accident. Forget it.
We were discussing yesterday the fact that the divine intelligence is eternal, but that evil is not.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the divine intelligence is more powerful. It's at a much higher level.
Absolutely.
Than evil. So tell us why evil is not at that level.
Well, because evil is part of creation. If you, in the terms of the world evolution with higher beings, there are hierarchies. And Ahriman and Lucifer and Sorath are not high self-creating beings. They are part of the higher cosmic plan to fulfill a certain function.
But they're functions of time, whereas divine intelligence is not.
Divine intelligence is above it. You could say the highest beings are the creators of what we call the evil beings. The evil beings are not self-created. They are put there by higher beings in order to stimulate an evolution with us, freedom, which could not be there otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But that belongs into the time. There is a wonderful...
So spiritual warfare is part of our graduating up the scale, so
yes,
to speak, right?
Yes,
right.
And to look at everything from a higher point of view. That's the aim. From a higher point of view. And, well, you see, if you ask somebody, what is eternal for you? Then you see a difficulty. Most people think it's just time not ending or counting not ending. That's not eternity.
Right.
Eternity is beyond time.
Right.
It's a higher level. And today, it's difficult to make this distinction. But if we don't make it, this is a saying by Steiner that I never forget. If you don't distinguish time and eternity, you have difficulties to understand evil. You have to have a higher level. And Goethe knew that in Faust, that would be for a nice discussion about Faust. In the beginning, it is very clear. You have the Lord of everything, and you have Mephisto. And the Lord gives Mephisto the permission to work on Faust, not the other way around.
Right.
That shows clearly the hierarchy.
Well, it's very interesting if you look at the warfare going on,
yes,
between the leadership and most people.
Yes.
Much of it is trickery and hiccuping with people's time, wasting their time, tricking,
yes,
them, sending them around. And the inflation is not just money, the inflation is time. And it's,
yeah,
a very studied, practiced,
yeah,
it's a very intentional strategy.
Also to trap people in time, to,
right,
to make them prisoners of time.
Right.
And that's what we have to break through if we have a spiritual warfare with,
right,
with Michael's help. Yeah, I was surprised. I added that yesterday. It is already in my 9/11 book, this aspect of evil,
mm-hmm,
and understanding it from a higher point of view, because it takes the emotions away. It does not help if I look at evil and I'm just in a rage and in a hate and so on. No. But how to do that? Anyway, that's a very worthy subject. Faust. We have to talk about Faust.
Yeah,
sometime.
I think so. Okay.
Thank
very
you
good,
so
Thomas.
Much.
Thank you.
I also want to thank Robert for his presence, for his patience, for his not giving up and say, what are you doing here all the time? No, it's important. It's a good cooperation. I am very grateful also to him.
Yeah, it was very a very nice series to do.
Good.
Really enjoyed it.
Great.
He needs no excuse to come to visit you.
He.
We need a sequel. Need a
he
sequel.
Doesn't need excuses.
I'm